IAFRIKN. iAfrican Radio.
Welcome to another episode of iAfrican Bites. My name is Bataung Kotsokwane, cybersecurity researcher and news editor at iAfrican.com. Social media has substantially decreased the cost of producing news and information. Small to medium players with efficient tools are now challenging conventional media companies. However, these opportunities do bring new challenges. Internet bandwidth is clogged with fake news and disinformation. Unreliable and even dubious news without merit or credibility now spread like wildfire online. Yusuf Alchetti from the Center of Analytics and Behavioral Change joins us on iAfrican Bites to talk about how her group utilizes brand monitoring technologies to track, monitor, and analyze online narratives in real time to report on and prevent fake news. Yo, Sibyl, thank you for joining us so much. Thank you for your time and for your energy.
Yo, Sibyl, let's just start here.
For the benefit of our listeners, what does your organization do? What does the Center of Analytics and Behavioral Change mean? What does it do?
So the Center for Analytics and Behavioral Change is a nonprofit organization that has been established to track and counter online mis- and disinformation narratives. Part of that is also a part of our mandate is to then generate healthy and respectful debate and dialogue so that we stimulate conversation in communities about serious issues wherever it's needed.
Lovely. How long have you guys been in operation?
Very early in 2020, we started off training. And then in about early April or March when COVID hit, there was a contract that came through to ask us to just go and dive through the data. And so we started as COVID hit in 2020. And we were, as an organization, we were kind of forced to just hit the ground running. And those were some crazy days waking up, you know, early hours of the morning to see what was being said on South African social media about the virus and, you know, the Bill Gates conspiracies and reading the 5G conspiracies and all the madness that went with it.
Right. Now, just on those conspiracies, and I mean, we were all there during COVID-19. There was a lot of conspiracies about 5G, about, you know, where the virus comes from. There was a lot of fake news and misinformation. Now, I think for us to understand this thing of fake news and misinformation, I just want to understand, what's the incentive behind fake news and misinformation? Is it profitable activity? Is it a political end goal? Why does it exist?
So they are obviously financial benefits that some people receive for creating mis- and disinformation. Understanding their true intention is obviously quite hard because the people who push out disinformation being content that's created with the intent of spreading false information, the guys who push that out, they will have an intention, whether it's financial, whether it's politically aligned. There is some sort of either cash or emotional reward that they receive for putting out disinformation. Right. Mostly it's financial, though.
Mostly it's financial. And in these activities, I mean, who are the actors within the jurisdiction of South Africa? Is it local actors, international actors? Who would these actors typically be?
So I see that Ama Bungane has come out with quite a good article recently that analyzes the recent spate of xenophobic violence in the country. And what they look at is who, they make some suggestions on who it could potentially be. So they suggest maybe it's political parties who, as we're approaching election time, are trying to create the scapegoat of the other, you know, trying to vilify the other so that they can create the narrative that things are really bad in the country or that, you know, around service delivery and so on. It could also be foreign interference. It's not entirely clear for us to see that at this point. And I'm also not sure if I should be saying who, you know, that, oh, it's this country or that country. What I can tell you is that with the monitoring tool that we use, if we keep it on a worldwide search And if we look for, say, specific hashtags or specific keywords, we can see everywhere in the world on a geographical representation where the content is being tweeted the most or where the content is showing up with those hashtags and keywords. So, for example, during the July riots in KZN, when the Phoenix massacre narrative was being driven,
yes,
there were, in India, we were able to pick up some conversation that had gone to India and was being shared there about people are killing Indians in South Africa and this is what's going on, you know, just like that hysteria that's being created outside, baseless and stirring up trouble.
Right, right. And I think just to go much more deeper in the tools that you guys use, because I mean, you have the Defending Democracy Project, and you guys have published a bunch of reports, you know, on that matter. And I think you alluded to one of them, what your organization would coin as hot button narratives. I mean, such as your xenophobia, such as the Phoenix incident that happened during the July riots. Now, what type of tools do you use to combat such narratives? I mean, from a software or hardware perspective, that is.
So we have a group of, part of our mandate is to also run dialogue facilitation. So it's a group of people who watch the different posts that are coming through and then try to positively engage with the people who are commenting or posting the material. So if somebody posts, for example, something that's just doesn't seem to be factual, or, you know, if they appear to be quite angry in something that they posted, our team then goes and asks them, you know, why is it that you feel this way? Where is it coming from? And we try to engage meaningfully in that way by listening and helping them to get fact-checked information where we can.
Just to understand it from a practical point, would this sort of be like a command center where you have like 2, 3, 4 guys or 6 guys or 10 guys on computers and actively gauging and tracking what's happening on, let's say, Twitter, for example. And then as a hashtag comes up, let's say hashtag around, you know, let's use the Phoenix, you know, the Phoenix during the July unrest, and, you know, there's some misinformation or fake news around that. Then one of your guys would then engage such a person.
So I'm on the research team. So I'm head of academic research for the Center for Analytics and Behavioral Change. I'm not sure how the workings of the dialogue facilitation team takes place. From the research side, we set up queries so that we can pull in the information that the dialogue facilitators can then review. And from there, they carry out their whatever their process is.
The dialogue unit is the one that interacts with the end users, being the people online, Twitter, or whatever the case may be.
Yes.
Now, let's go into, I think, the digital narrative manipulation. You know, when I looked at, you know, that offering and you have various projects, you know, it sounds like more of an offensive strategy to combat misinformation. Now, I'm particularly interested in the 3-phase approach that you use to undermine misinformation and fake news. Can you take me through that 3-phase approach?
So we use brand monitoring tools. So in order to track and counter the mis and disinformation, what we do is we use the brand monitoring tools, run queries that return a whole lot of data to us. As we sift through that, we then, if things don't appear to be accurate, so if something seems like it's a, I want to say tabloid, but it's not a, if it's a very big claim that's being made, we then take that information to groups like The Real 411, Media Monitoring Africa, and ask their fact checkers, who I believe is made up of a legal team, to run through the information and confirm how true the information is in posts. Once they say that, no, this is not accurate, we can then communicate with the person who posted it and say, hey, we've run this through a fact checker. This doesn't appear to be accurate. Would you be interested in taking it down or maybe explaining where you got it from? Why did you get it?
Okay, and it sounds like there's a bunch of this. I mean, you mentioned Media Monitoring Africa. There's more than one sort of agencies or institutions that you use in this ecosystem to fact check and fight against misinformation. You perhaps also work with law enforcement agencies.
At the moment, I'm not working personally with the law enforcement agencies, so but I'm not sure about the rest of the organization.
And what's your relationship with like Media Monitoring Africa, and then maybe just also take us through other partners that you guys work with.
It's William and Tandy from Media Monitoring Africa. There is a close relationship between the CABC and Media Monitoring Africa. The space is so small that I think, and it's, we are in early days, so everybody's trying to help everyone out so that we can figure out best solutions to not allow a full-on civil riot to take place in the streets, you know. So there's DFR Lab also and Code for Africa, who are very we're very busy in the South African space, and we have worked with those organizations before. But there are also organizations outside of South Africa, like Digital Public Square, who we've partnered with. And more recently, we've worked with the University of Cambridge, not so much on the disinformation side, but using our social media capabilities, look into what was being said about exercise in Nigeria during the lockdown period. Very different to what we normally look at, but interesting. There's always something to find.
Right? I mean, the reason why I ask is because, you know, with iAfrican, we worked on a project called Xenophobia Watch, you know, a project that, a platform we developed with Vets. It was mainly to track trends in order to preempt xenophobic attacks. I just want to know, in terms of your, in terms of the tools that you use and the projects you're involved in, how effective are they to sort of preempt fake news related or influenced events such as riots that you mentioned, such as, you know, protests or whatever the case may be?
We don't have an early warning system in place just yet, but it is something that we're working on. And it's something that our team is trying really hard to figure out how we set up an early warning system using the tools and resources that we have, because that's ideal. If you start to see some of the trouble picking up, you know, you can put interventions in place that counter what's being said there, or have the fact checking come in sooner. That being said, I know that with this last Deep Sloot research report that we did, there was, to an extent, early pickup of the narratives. So,
was this through social media, or what medium were these?
It was through social media.
Okay.
And using our tools, we noticed on the Friday afternoon, I think it's the 7th of April, that something was not looking okay in South African general Twitter conversation. You know, it looked like something was up. There was a hot button topic, as you said.
Okay.
And as we saw these numbers growing, we were able to mobilize our research team quite quickly to go and set up a tagging sort of system.
Okay.
And went deeper into the Xeno conversation and looked specifically at the more recent conversation that was being driven. Mm. From there, what we did is we were able to see it happening now and collect data on it, but it was happening over the weekend. So to run interventions of countering the information is a bit more difficult, especially when Friday afternoon, this has hit Saturday, Sunday, guys are headed into their weekend. You can't really expect teams to be around to push out content and so on at that time. Also, we have to be so careful when dealing in this space because of the false narratives that are being shared out there. So one of the things that we encountered very early on with the Deep Sloot report was that hashtags like Kutsak SA Media and the media won't tell you this and so on was being driven quite heavily in spaces where people are almost calling out the media, saying, hey, you're not looking at my story. You have to start asking questions like, why aren't the big guys, why isn't ENCA, why is SABC News, why are they so hesitant to act on that information? Maybe there's some interference going on here and it's not authentic. It's not an authentic type of information that we're seeing spread online. Right. If that makes sense.
Back to the Deep Sloot one. In terms of content, so you pick up these conversations using your tracking systems. You would follow the conversations. Let's say it was not a weekend. Let's say it's during the week. What sort of content would you be producing to counter such information, misinformation and fake news?
We do have a content team who looks to bring a more peaceful narrative through. So it's not about, we don't want to attack anybody because a lot of the attacking is already happening.
Okay.
We want to, so for example, one of the narratives that was being pushed during when the DeepSuit 7 and Alvis Nyati keywords were being pushed is you're on your own. The government has let you down. You are on your own and it is only you.
Right.
So to be able to then push more, I wouldn't say harmonic, but I feel like that's wrong, a harmonized...
A much more, I think, patriotic type of content or message.
Yeah, but, you know, even there, I'm hesitant to say that it's patriotic and nationalistic and we're only focused on South Africa and not taking the concerns of the people into heart, because that's not the case. We're trying to just push something that reminds people that we're all South Africans, we're all in this together. And it's actually quite often a very small number of people that are making a really loud amount of noise, a really big noise, and that you shouldn't get swept up and caught up in all of that when there are many other things that our media, our politicians, our government departments should be focusing on.
So now, just to understand, with this content, would it be images, videos, articles? What exactly are we talking about?
So are you referring to the misleading content that's online?
No, the content that your team generates to counter the fake news and the misinformation.
Yes, it's usually, it'll be pushed out from our Facebook page or Twitter page from our profiles. And it's either we have created video content in the past.
Okay.
So we've got a nice one about disinformation or it would be images.
Okay. To counter the large amount, like you said, you know, it's large amounts of sort of misinformation by relatively a small group of, you know, Twitter users or social media users. I mean, to make a dent, to really counter that, you know, do you guys utilize sort of bots to spread your harmonization message through?
No.
So it goes into a much more larger pool of social media people.
Yeah, so we have our followers. We
definitely
don't use bots. I think that that's one of the tools used by the guys who are spreading disinformation, and it's part of the problem because there's just so many of those accounts. How do you keep up with all the information that they're able to spread? So, yeah, that's not what we do.
And then, Yusuf, just let's get into this topic. There's a lot of trends, right? Like you said, Operation Dudula, Put SA Forward. One of the hot button narratives that you also highlighted was, you know, white monopoly capital. Now, you know, some of these narratives are abused. A lot of them actually are abused. But, you know, when you look into, let's say, for example, the high levels of economic inequality, and they're very based on racial dynamics. I mean, 70% of wealth in South Africa is in the hands of white South Africans. You know, what algorithms or research tools or methodologies do you use to differentiate the lies, the lies or partial truths or partial lies and full-on truths?
So, okay, I hope I'm going to be able to answer this question really well for you, because it's something that does come up as we're sitting with the data quite often. And it's that when we see big complaints or things coming up that have really riled up citizens in South Africa, we try to ask ourselves the questions is, hang on, is there really a problem to start off with? Can we get statistical proof to show us, yes, that crime is very big in this area, and it is, yes, perpetuated by a specific group of people who match this description and so on?
Yes.
And we ask those questions and try to be neutral, a lot more neutral in our response, to say this could be a very concerning situation that we are in. We can't dispute the concerns that South African citizens have, but the information that they are being presented with must be presented accurately. It can't be anecdotal stories of, oh, this person of this nationality stole my car, and this person from that nationality, they broke into my house. It's just putting information like that out there to people who are not analytically and critically engaging with the material. It's not fair to them. And it's also just not true. It's such a yeah, it's hard to provide some sort of direct answer to that. But something else that I have been considering a lot. I did my master's dissertation on disinformation in South Africa. Right. And I'm hopefully going to be doing a PhD very soon, if I find the time.
Definitely, you need to find the time to do that. I think that would be a wealth of knowledge, I mean, for the good work that you guys are doing.
And part of the questions that have come to me as I'm looking through the work is there are a lot of hot button topics that need discussion. And you find sometimes that these discussions are brought up, but through this random mobilization. So for example, the first thing that springs to my mind is the Bell Pottinger white monopoly capital phrase that was being used. It's not that white monopoly capital didn't exist before Bell Pottinger came up with the phrase. They came up with a phrase that was actually then able to be used to manipulate a certain percentage of the public. So they, to understand the intention behind that is important. But it's also important to say, hey, they provided the word, they provided us the language that allowed us as South Africans to start talking about those problems. So we could have a common understanding to say, look, this is what it is. It's called white monopoly capital. How do we now address that? Where do we go from here? And please, I'm not saying that their tactics are good or that they should have created that. I'm just saying that it's very interesting that out of bad sometimes comes good.
No, I totally agree with you, Yusuf. And, you know, the nuances in a lot of these hot button narratives are very, how can I say, they're very difficult. But I want to know from as is right now, once you get your data and research, what metrics or yardstick do you guys use currently to say that there's a bit of a problem here, we need to counter this with some content, or we need to, you know, media monitoring Africa? What yardstick do you guys use, or metric do you use to make that judgment?
So we usually look to see if there's if there's incitement to violence that's taken place. So if there's hate speech that's used, incitement to violence, or if there's information spread that could potentially create a situation of social divisiveness. So where we see social cohesion is about to be attacked, for example, by saying, I can use the Phoenix massacre example again, where little information is known and then a bunch of information is then shared saying Indians are killing blacks in South Africa. Go and sort them out now. You know, there's a potential there for people to actually bear arms. So how far out that's going to break out is something that we do consider around issues of social cohesion. Yeah, and we react from there.
Now, we've talked about a lot of software and hardware and research methodology tools. When you look at, for example, the HIV/AIDS crisis, you know, that happened some years ago and it was declared a pandemic, mechanisms like life orientation in schools were introduced to educate, you know, society, specifically, you know, children on, you know, preventative measures and understand the virus more. What human behavior sort of mechanisms are you employing, or rather, you know, should be employed in order to really educate people around misinformation, fake news, or sort of verify, you know, what is a reliable piece of content? What is a reliable source of article source, or whatever the case may be?
So that's a really good question. And I think it's what gets to the crux of what do we do? What's a solution from here? And there have been studies in Canada, mostly in the global north. We're starting to do studies in the global south now. And Professor Herman Busserman, the UCT media studies professor, he's written a book recently also that looks into this. But there is analytical thinking is the strongest predictor that will help you, that will determine fake news acceptance. So that means that the stronger your ability to think analytically and critically, the less likely you are to fall prey to fake news. And there's been quantitative studies, loads of them done. I even did one amongst the South African audience, and that was a very clear result that came out of my study. So training people on how to critically and analytically deal with the data that they're looking, the content that they're looking at in front of them is important. Now, what tends to happen on social media platforms is that you got the never-ending scroll. And so you're just sitting there and you're mindlessly going through it very fast and, you know.
And it's just hitting you all the time.
I had a TikTok binge sesh yesterday before I went to bed, and I was just like, my brain was going. So you don't, it moves so fast that people don't have time to really consider the information that they're seeing. So in a study in America that was conducted by a really good researcher into this phenomenon of disinformation, who's called Gordon Pennycook, he went back and allowed people more time to look at the examples of mis and disinformation. And when they had more time to deliberate, they actually scored better on the fake news test. So for now, the best piece of advice I can give you is to you and your listeners is to take your time when you're reading it. Don't just read the headline and assume you understand what's in the body of it. Read slowly, look through the different, make sure the numbers make sense also. People often try to, I think a lot of people get scared by numbers and playing into that, the guys who create disinformation narratives will find a very tricky way of expressing numbers that makes people go, oh, I can't read this, so I'm going to take a step back.
One last question I need to ask you this. You're a .org organization. How do you keep the lights on in terms of budget, resources, and staff?
We don't have a very big team. I think there's about 50 of us, but it is growing. We have fantastic guys like Stuart Jones, who is always running out to try and find funding for us. And yeah, we rely on donations from the very kind public. And as long as those keep coming through and we get funding for different research initiatives, we can keep the lights on.
Thank you so much for your time, Yusuf Chanti. And yeah.
Thank you. This has been great.
Thank you for listening to iAfrican Bytes. Do check out our other podcasts on iafrican.com/radio. That is iafrikan.com/radio.